Spidey, Weird Al. Stalker songs were quite the fad, and now we learn about fanfic tags. Taylor Swift's new album's dud. L.A. escape rooms are real sus. X-Men always gets an F-bomb, but Andy doesn't research the song. It's time for a show to start now. We're covering Melanie on Weird Pals. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Weird Pals. My name is Tim.
My name is Andy.
And sure, you can find her performing improv in San Francisco on almost any Friday night. I didn't prep this at all. And sure...
You never prep this.
I sometimes do, sometimes. It's been rare. Find her handiwork on Star Wars and Marvel comics at your shop sometime in the future, unless it's already out, but sometime. But most importantly, don't you ever say the word survivor around her, or else you're in for a diatribe about any old season you can think of. Everyone, welcome to the show. It's Grace Orris.
Hi. Thank you guys for having me. Happy to be here. Happy to recommend any Survivor season for newbies, for first seasoned fans. You know, let me know what you're looking for, and I have a Survivor season that can fit your needs. Let you know.
I was listening to a different podcast, and Boston Rob was like dropped as a random reference. And
yeah.
The guy who said it was like, that's a joke for like five listeners. And I was like, I know at least one who would get it.
And it was for me specifically. Boston Rob is a Survivor legend. He's played like five times and only won once. But for some reason, people still talk about him like he's one of the best players in the history of the show. I'm like, he needed like four tries to win. I feel like that's not like a good success rate. But his whole thing is that he's from Boston and he like never appears on
TV.
He never appears on TV without like a Red Sox hat on, and he just sort of like refers to himself in the third person a lot. He's like, hey, I'm Boston Rob. These people,
Boston Rob,
yeah,
he's got a bone to pick with you.
Yeah. I feel bad for all the other Bostonian contestants that don't get to use the town name for their branding.
That's the thing too, is like the Survivor producers are so in love with him that it feels like every other season they cast someone specifically to like fulfill the Boston Rob archetype, and it's this person who's like so aggressively from Boston, and you can just feel like the producers behind the camera like coaching them like, no, like say that again, but like more like a mob boss like from Boston. Like you can just feel it because they're trying to like follow up Boston Rob, which I'm like, I don't need any more Boston Rob. I've gotten my fill of Boston Rob.
It's like, look, we're not allowed to give you stuff, but here's a portable DVD player. Watch Good Will Hunting three times in a row and just
do
talk
that.
Like Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Talk like Matt Damon.
Just do that, yeah. So it's a little sad, but you know, I appreciate Boston Rob content.
They should have like an aggressively Minnesotan contestant.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Minnesota Jack.
Yeah. I want to see like Des Moines Nancy or something. This is really random. Yeah.
Watch out for Des Moines Nancy. She'll stab your back.
Des Moines Nancy is someone that I would play in an improv scene for sure. For sure. Yeah.
All right, everyone. We're not here to talk about Survivor anymore, unless it comes up in some other context later.
I'm sure.
Don't tempt me.
We're here to talk about a track on Even Worse called Melanie. Andy, have you heard this song before your research today?
The research I did very quickly. 30 minutes before recording because I forgot we were recording today, or didn't know we were recording today. I had heard the song before.
Well, that's helpful. I knew. Yes. I knew you could handle the challenge then.
I didn't recall it right before until I pressed play, and then it's like, oh, right, this song. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Grace, had you heard this particular song before?
This particular one? No. So it was my first time listening experience in preparation for this podcast. And is a bit more macabre than I remember past Weird Al songs.
Sure. Same. Yeah.
But it was interesting.
I felt very put off by it. This listen.
Yeah. And I was like, okay. Like, it was a bit more edgy than I remember.
Yeah.
You know.
What's your Weird Al history up until when you were assigned to go listen to Melanie?
Yeah. So for me, like, I associate Weird Al with like getting into YouTube in like grade school, like being in elementary school. And
Oh
I
God, that makes me
know,
feel so old.
sorry. This is like
Oh.
every time I'm around any of my friends that I do improv with, I sort of like hint at my age and then really upsets people, but don't worry about it. It's like being in elementary school. Being in elementary school and like watching funny skits on YouTube is like a very illicit, cool activity that I did with my bedroom door closed, like watching silly YouTube videos.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, very cool. So for the longest time, Weird Al was like that to me. So like I like to the point where I didn't even associate them as parodies of pre-existing songs or parodies of
Sure.
pre-existing music videos. Like for the longest time, I just thought Eat It was like a funny song about picky eaters. And
Now, see, we are kindred spirits because we too have that same confusion,
yeah.
but just the medium through which we digested was different. But we have the same backwards understanding of music history.
Yeah. Like White and Nerdy, I like thought was the funniest thing in the world when I was like, 11 years old or whatever. And my dad had to be like, Grace, like that's it's like right and dirty. Like that's a real song.
Your
Like,
dad had to school
well,
you on
because
Chamillionaire.
I would be like humming it to myself because I would get it stuck in my head, like without saying the lyrics. And people would be like, why is Grace humming that song? And I'd be like,
Oh,
it's
sure.
a Weird Al song. She doesn't know what it is, but I now know that Beat It is a real Michael Jackson song for the listeners at home. I figured it out. FYI.
Proud. We're proud.
So stop writing your letters.
This is why
Yeah.
I
Who
started
knows?
the show because I knew I had a lot of actual musicians to become familiar with. Like I know the Weird Al version, and sure, I guess there's a band called Madonna. And
Yeah.
there's like, oh no, that's just a person. Okay, good. Good to know.
This makes me feel better because I've been roasted for years, like, because I was a big Glee fan when Glee was first airing,
Oh yeah, that's all covers, yeah.
which explains like my whole personality. But for the longest time, they do Bohemian Rhapsody in the season one finale of Glee. Like a show choir group.
Appropriate.
Yeah, show choir group with Jonathan Groff sings that song.
With Jonathan Groff, cool.
Yeah, Jonathan Groff did a guest star stint in Glee and he was like the head of a rival show choir and they do Bohemian
Yeah.
Rhapsody. And I was like, oh, that's the song from Glee. Like I didn't realize that it was a Queen song. And people like to roast me because to this day I still prefer to listen to the Glee version instead of the Freddie. Because
That's fine.
it's the one I heard first.
I mean, that makes sense because they're doing it a cappella, right? There's no instrumentation going
No,
on.
there's instrumentation. It's just like a show
Oh, then
choir
never mind.
version. It just has
Okay.
Jonathan Groff singing it, which is why I prefer it. So that used to be like when we would play like icebreaker games in college or whatever, I'd be like, oh, I'm just gonna tell you like my worst opinion. My worst opinion is that I prefer the Queen Cast version of Bohemian Rhapsody over the original. People get really heated. So it feels good to air it out now for you guys.
I know Bohemian Rhapsody as the song from Wayne's World, so
Right.
that's like I don't know who Freddie Mercury was until I kind of gleaned bits and pieces of Freddie Mercury, and then we did an episode on Queen, and now I know a bunch of fun facts about
Yeah.
Freddie Mercury. Like he
I
only
didn't know
uses
Bohemian Rhapsody
half of a
until the
guitar
movie
stand.
Bohemian Rhapsody. So.
Yeah, you stole the joke out of my mouth, Andy. I
What?
was gonna be like, till the excellent movie Bohemian Rhapsody, winner of the Oscar for best editing, famously.
Oh, the most perfect editing ever done in a film.
Really good amount of cuts
Oh,
in
the
that
newest
movie.
Weird Al movie is basically a rip-off of that, mostly like the style of Bohemian Rhapsody. And films like it, but Bohemian Rhapsody really was like the cover of the movie is just ripping off of the cover of Bohemian Rhapsody.
That's awesome.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
All right, folks, let's get us started. Wouldn't you know that this is a Weird Al original in quotations, which means
Quote
that
unquote.
my job gets a little bit nebulous on who I'm supposed to like research exactly. And so there are on the fandom page, I think,
There's two conflicting things. One is that it says that this is like a Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers style pastiche,
which I kind of hear.
Which I also kind of hear.
He's kind of doing a Tom Petty,
especially in the verses.
Yes.
But I've already covered Tom Petty in season one when we had to do Stop Dragging My Car Around. So I said, I would love to not do the same person twice, so what can I do? So I looked on a different site, and they had a note on, I think it was Fandom, that said, like, the chorus of this song sounds a lot like a different piece of music, a song that I had never heard of before by an artist that I had never heard of before. So I was like, well, this qualifies. The artist is Owen Paul. And the song is "You're My Favorite Waste of Time." As I begin, as I began digging into this particular song, this adds to the cases on even worse, where Weird Al is doing a parody of a cover, because Owen Paul releases a cover of this song in 1986, but the original version was written and released as a demo by this other gentleman named Marshall Crenshaw in 1982. So what I'm going to share with you...
That name, by the way, it just sounds... When I read that too, and it's like, okay, so this is a cover of like an old folksy song, because this sounds like a Waylon Jennings-esque type person, or like, and it's like Marshall Crenshaw. But it's like, no, 1982. Okay.
Yeah, it's amazing how quick turnaround it was, how the original one was recorded, and then there was just a pile of people doing covers of it, and one of them hit. Like, they're sort of like, by the average of the team, it was a successful song. So this is Marshall Crenshaw. This is a collection of home demos that were recorded between 1979 and 1982-ish or something like that. Marshall Crenshaw was recording in his own apartment, and he would record with like a little drum machine and his own guitars and stuff. And this is his original song, which ended up being a B-side for him. Getting the room tone.
Wow, it feels like he's plugging in his guitar. I read just like the opening paragraph of Marshall Crenshaw's Wikipedia page, and it said like there's definitely a lot of Buddy Holly influence. Just heard that.
Yeah.
That was very Buddy Holly.
And it's almost the same melody and harmony as Melanie, which is kind of wild. But much slower tempo. Marshall Crenshaw is actually originally... became famous because he was in the musical theater production of Beatlemania,
right?
Which is like a full-on Beatles concert, basically, that was traveling around the United States with four guys dressed up like the Beatles, playing Beatles music with like audio-visual stuff. So I don't really think it was a musical with like a plot necessarily. I think it was like a more akin to a concert,
like,
from what I can understand.
Like
a review.
Yeah, like a cover band, but they dress up like the Beatles. I was like, that's different from like a jukebox musical like Mamma Mia, where they make up some insane story to like tie the songs together. That's just four dudes dressing up like the Beatles.
But they put him in like these big old, like they played in like the Winter Garden and like all this stuff.
Wow.
And he, I think he was on the touring company of this show. And this is an advertisement for Beatlemania.
Beatlemania is playing to standing ovations across the country.
But that's just because we don't provide chairs.
That's right.
They look like them, they sound like them.
They look like them, sound like them.
Better than a chorus line. I've never seen anything like
better than a chorus line.
That's crazy. A chorus line's pretty good. That's a crazy statement.
Oh, they do. They actually do costume changes, though. Sergeant Pepper for a second.
You just have to experience it.
It was like living my childhood again.
It's really great.
I was so happy. We've seen it twice.
I'm coming back again.
It's so funny how, like, even this looks like actual Beatlemania fan footage.
Yeah.
But it's like people who weren't around for the first Beatlemania and wanted to try to experience it again, I guess.
Exactly.
We missed out on it the first time. It's like we have the Beatles at home, you know?
This YouTube page is Bionic Disco, so kudos for that name.
Bionic Disco. Well done. So once he started getting his personal recorded music going, he made Crenshaw sort of made his music his full-time career, and he ended up having some relative success. His first album had a single on it that was popular-ish, but there's footage of him playing Letterman and playing a couple other venues. And he still plays music with, different super groups and that kind of thing. A couple of interesting notes. He, as his music career is kicking off, he goes on American Bandstand and has this excellent interview with Dick Clark.
Oh, boy.
Oh, geez.
Why do you work so hard? I don't mean right this minute, but why do you travel all the time?
We travel to accommodate our thousands and thousands of fans.
He's serious, you know that. No, you really are a hard worker. Now, why did you move from Detroit to New York?
That happened by chance. I was hired to be a John in Beatlemania.
Wait a minute. We better clear that up. That's right. You played John Lennon for about 18 months. Did you enjoy that?
It was okay. I did it for 2 months here at the Pantages in Hollywood.
Did you learn anything from hiding behind his facade?
Not really, no. Actually, I did. I learned that I wasn't cut out to be an actor and that I didn't like the theater.
And then you did your own thing.
That's
well, I was curious. When I looked at this album, was this produced by an English producer?
Look, he loses the energy with the lead singer, and then he just has to turn to the bass player and be like, maybe this guy's got juice.
The improv coach in me is losing his mind because it's like, Dick Clark, cheat out. His back is to the camera.
Yeah, it was made in New York City.
Oh, turn around, buddy. You're Dick Clark.
Last year you played?
Yeah, and we're on our way to, equaling that number this year. We came here from Duluth, Minnesota.
You are going to go out for another 200 nights or so?
Probably. You know, well, the thing is, we like to do this, and that's why we do so much of it.
That's all that counts.
Wow.
Like how nonchalant he is about every answer. He could not care less that he's on Dick Clark right now. Would you learn?
I also felt like Dick Clark didn't care that he was that Marshall Crenshaw was on his show. It seems like he was a little condescending.
Right? Yeah. For our thousands of fans, yeah, guys, he's serious. Sick burn.
You know, Andy's not the first person to point out that Crenshaw has similarities to Buddy Holly. The guy even kind of looks like him with his glasses and with his power pop kind of music. And wouldn't you know, the man gets cast as Buddy Holly in La Bamba.
But I thought he wasn't much of an actor and he didn't like the theater.
Whoopsie doopsies. He got put in a movie.
Oh my God, he's in La Bamba.
Guess he reevaluated.
Yeah. Which is odd because we've already talked about La Bamba on this season of this podcast, because Weird Al does
lasagna
instead of La Bamba. Grace, Grace, do you see that A to B he did over there?
Yeah, sure do. Classic A to B.
And I talked about this in the lasagna episode, but we watched La Bamba in Spanish class freshman year of high school. I'm fairly certain that Buddy Holly only has one scene, and it's right before the plane crash. So Marshall Crenshaw didn't have to do too much acting.
I guess that's good.
It seemed like the scene was mostly just a concert, and he was singing.
Or that, yeah.
And Yeah, he pulled it off. He does it fine. Yeah.
How ironic. He made his career covering other musicians' songs, and then his most famous song is covered. And that's the more famous version of that song, right?
Well, so this is interesting. Like, he gets more famous on some of his other music and not My Favorite Waste of Time. There are some more famous covers of this song. Mm-hmm. First, in 1983, it gets covered by Bette Midler, who came up on this show last season when we did Toothless People, and we got to see her acting chops in the film Ruthless People.
Gosh.
And this is what people have called like a new wave phase of Bette Midler, because I think she just sort of pops on different musical trends. And I am almost entirely unfamiliar with Bette Midler's musical career. Does anyone have more than 0% information?
I honestly don't know if she was a singer, then an actor, or an actor, then a singer, or if it was all at the same time. I have no clue.
I mean,
she's just everything.
I'm like a theater kid, so I know her as like a theater legend, Bette Midler. And I know that she was in Hocus Pocus.
Mm-hmm. True.
Because working like in pop culture publishing, you come across a lot of people who are like, how have you never seen that? How have you never seen that? So my first job out of college, I like hadn't seen Hocus Pocus, and I was like, what do you mean you haven't seen Hocus Pocus? So I had to watch it, and I was like, pretty good, you know, she's pretty good in it.
Yeah, like a movie I would have liked as a child, but yeah. I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's a great kids movie.
No, I know. It's just like, it's funny to me because the only people who ever tell me to watch it are like 30, and I'm like, well, I feel like I'm glad that you like it, you know. It's cute.
It's millennials who are trying to vicariously live through your generation.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, sorry, I'm on TikTok. I don't watch movies anymore. Just kidding.
I get my entertainment in a minute and 90 second doses.
Yeah, my brain can't handle anymore. Sorry. Yeah, Bette Midler, The Wind Beneath My Wings, right? Right?
Yeah. Beaches, The Rose.
Fiddler on the Roof.
Mm-hmm.
You guys Fiddler on the Roof heads?
I saw Fiddler on the Roof, the traveling Broadway show, when I was a senior in high school, and I absolutely loved it. I thought it was the coolest show I'd ever seen.
It's crazy. I think
I could just like watch the wedding scene for like hours.
Yeah.
I've never seen the show, but summer drama camp before sixth grade, one of the classes was singing, and so we had to choose a Broadway song to sing, and I chose If I Were a Rich Man.
That's such a wild choice.
By Gwen Stefani.
Botched it, and thankfully did not have to sing it during the end of session presentation for everybody.
Nice. A blessing in disguise.
In fact, the only things I did were improv and acting, so it worked out.
I feel like If I Were a Rich Man, you can kind of talk sing it, no? For parts of it?
There's a melody. I mean, there's the gibberish part or whatever.
So you just sing it. That was good.
I'm a better singer now. I mean, I'm not a great singer, but I mean, I got the emo whine going, so it's fine.
Yeah, Fiddler on the Roof is one of those musicals that my family went to go see. Like, my family's a big theater family. And it was at the Pantages or something, like, because they bring back those, like, classic shows, like, to tour every once in a while. Because, like, you know, all the old theater fans want to go see it. And that's like, that and Cats are like the two musicals that my dad is like, I will never go see those again because they're too boring for him.
Interesting. Okay.
In his opinion.
Okay. Cats, I get.
Yeah. Cats is, I can't really do Cats either, to be honest with you. Cats was the one where like my dad took, I think, just me because my mom and my brother couldn't go. And that was like the only.
They're allergic.
My mom is allergic, but obviously not. My mom is like a big Cat stan. She's like, it's all about the dance. And I was a dancer in high school and people don't appreciate the dance. But she couldn't go. So my dad took me. And that was like the one show where my dad was like, Grace, like, if you want to walk out at intermission, like, you can just tell me. I was like, no, we don't need to walk out. That would be rude. My dad's like, no, but like, if you are tired, like, we can go. We can walk out.
Dad's like trying to gaslight you out of the theater.
Yeah.
Cool.
You hate this show.
Yeah, I was like, Dad, I want to see the Rum Tum Tugger or whatever. No, you guys stick around. It was interesting.
This isn't any of that. Are we ready to watch Bette Midler?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, right. This is so good. This is great. That's what I like.
You're mine, baby. You're my favorite waste of time.
What is this strobe effect? Oh, Star White.
I like the cape.
Yeah.
And this is like kind of like a montage of some performances and or like just she's using like sound check for a concert to make a music video.
Yeah.
And sometimes she's definitely singing.
What the?
And sometimes she's
now
just...
she's a mermaid in a wheelchair for some... Okay, she's playing with a giant boob balloon.
Yeah.
Did you see that? That balloon had a nipple on it.
Why are there mermaids in wheelchairs?
What is happening?
Why?
I feel like they'd be hard to walk around if they didn't have some sort of aid.
Then why choose to be mermaids?
Oh, they see they're another upside down.
Oh my goodness. Heart wipe. We got a star wipe and a heart wipe. Like, she's not even singing the song in these clips.
Right.
There's like no lip syncing to, like, they tried to match up her lip movements with something, but it's clearly not the same song. And okay, now she's playing with a shirt. What the?
There's your boobs.
Big boobs.
They are. What is this?
She's like wrestling with 4 foot
and
wide
puppets.
Boobs. Yeah.
Boob puppets.
What does that have to do with the song?
This doesn't have anything to do with the song. It has to do with whatever her live show is, and they're just cutting random fun clips out of the concert. Do you think maybe it's a message of like, performing for you is my favorite waste of time, and look at all the things I've done to waste time with my fans.
I feel like that's a generous reading of this.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
This is better than the music video we watched earlier this season where it was just footage of the Blue Angels flying around.
Yes, that's true.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Which is like, how is that the official music video?
For what song?
The band was nowhere to be seen.
It was a Van Halen song.
Mm. Uh-huh, yeah.
I forget which one.
Now, we still haven't gotten to the version that is closest to Weird Al's. It's the third iteration of this song by a gentleman named Owen Paul, who is from Scotland. And truth be told, me and Justine are going to Scotland this summer. And so when I learned those two facts, I found Owen Paul on Facebook and I got a friend request going. So I'll let you know if Owen Paul and I become friends. And
wait,
we see
a
each other
friend request or like following his Facebook
on Facebook
page.
I clicked request friends or whatever that button is. And so it's pending on whether or not he will accept an invitation to be friends with me.
He doesn't have an official page. You're certain that this is the real guy?
It's just a guy. Now, the Marshall Crenshaw, that had an official page and it had like 27,000 followers. And I was like, there's no way I'm cracking into that castle.
But, well, no.
Oh, and Paul, he's just like a dude. And right. So, all right, sounds good.
And you're certain it's the same Owen Paul?
Yeah, I scrolled through and he's like, you know, posted photos of himself and his family and like gigs that he's doing around the UK.
Wow.
Hey, Owen, when I come to Scotland, can I crash with
you?
Yeah,
I sent no messages. I just sent a request. So
yeah.
Has Justine signed off on this itinerary item?
Oh, of course not.
Of course not. Right. She'll be cool with it, though, probably.
Yeah, she'll be cool.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, if he lives along the way, you know, I don't know where he lives in Scotland.
Where are you guys going?
All over. And we got a rental car. So,
you can go find him.
Do a little side mission.
Good.
We're going to the two biggest cities and then stuff in between. So, possibly. Owen Paul, this is his basically one-hit wonder, which is a cover song that has already been covered. But it's, I think, got in like top 10 territory. For a hot second in 1986, which is when Weird Al is recording Even Worse. So it is possible that this is the song that he's directly inspired by for this one. And we've got an actual music video.
It starts with a car starting up, trying to start up.
You're mine.
I don't know if it's just me, but I don't know if the audio is lined up with the visuals.
How can you tell? I don't know if their mouths are even moving. How can you tell?
It looked like the mouths were moving, but he wasn't lip syncing.
I need you to bookmark that exact sentence for the next thing I'm going to share with you.
Is this a whole music video? Just two silhouettes gallivanting around on a beach?
What do you mean, just?
Right. Okay, sorry. Oh, cartwheel.
What the heck?
Excuse me.
That was a huge, like, he was on the ground and he leapt up like he was attached to wires.
Now, we'll notice that because it's now in the UK, we're spelling the word favorite differently.
With an extra U.
Wait, is this going backwards?
Oh, it could be.
His mouth is not lined up for the words at all.
No, this is going backwards.
Now, here's a question. Is the music video a backwards music video, or was it uploaded to YouTube backwards to save them from some sort of copyright?
It says in the description, not yet appeared on newly created Owen Paul Vivo channel, so reversed as it is still blocked.
Oh, interesting. So we're doing sort of a Tenet experience here.
Yes.
This is a temporal pincer move, this video.
Oh my god.
Robert Pattinson's going to come in at the end and say, see you at the beginning, or whatever the hell he says at the end of that movie. Yeah,
he says it muffled in some wind.
Yep. Right. Right.
Yeah, that's right, the protagonist. We have a long-standing friendship that has not been the heart of this film at all, but it's going to make you cry.
Oh, she's water skiing backwards, and that seems complicated.
This is really trippy.
Watching someone water ski backwards is very cool. And falling over. So do we think the plot of this is like he falls in front of her while water skiing, and she's attempting to sunbathe, and she like splashes, she gets splashed, and that's when they have their meet cute. And then they spend the rest of the day on the beach together, and then they're dancing in silhouettes by the end.
I think that's the memento of it all.
I would say so.
Just acting a goof. Now, Grace, when you were in your Tumblr days, and boys are trying to get your attention, how often are they just like falling over and attempting to be funny as a way to say anything?
Oh, geez. All the boys trying to get my attention in high school? Let me count them. The way that boys would hit on me during high school was to say, isn't it funny that we always play the mom and dad roles in the plays that we do because we both look kind of weird? It's like, isn't it funny that we always play the mom and dad and not the younger roles because we're both like not as good looking as everybody else? Like, wow. So we make a really natural couple. And I was like, thank you.
Wow.
But there was also a lot of general, I feel like boys in high school and college and in adulthood, there's a lot of general sort of like attempted feats of strength, you know, in front of.
Yeah, it's very caveman energy.
Yeah. A lot of peacocking.
Mm-hmm. The testosterone just ramps up.
Yeah, just doing cartwheels.
It's what we do.
Out of context. That's really the way to a woman's heart. But for anyone
backwards
listening,
cartwheels.
Backwards cartwheels on a beach would be my tip.
Now this is the last thing I'm going to share with you today, because when you get a hit song in the UK, you have to do shows like Top of the Pops, or now it's like Jules Holland, where you get to go play your songs to like a live studio audience, or like pre-taped in some way, which is true in America. But one of the shows that I was not familiar with was called like Pebble Beach, I think is what this is called.
Like the golf course?
In the UK?
These are both great follow-up questions that you just asked, and I don't have an answer to either of them.
Pebble Beach is like a swanky golf course.
Yeah.
Now, it kind of looks like a golf course from this vantage point.
No, Pebble Mill.
Pebble Mill.
I said Pebble Mill,
Pebble
everyone.
Beach is the golf course.
Right.
Pebble Mill sounds more English.
Yeah. Pebble Beach, another thing that my dad likes. Talking a lot about Graham on this podcast.
Shout out to Graham.
Yeah, likes Pebble Beach, dislikes cats.
Wow.
That's all you need to know.
What a unique combo.
I know.
Okay, so now this is you'll see a person introducing the band, and then the band is supposed to play their song for the audience of this show. I say should because here's how it does go. I need you to be explaining this to the audience because it will not be obvious to the listeners of how this goes wrong.
Okay. And Paul and my favorite waste of time.
Okay. The band's standing there. The song's playing.
Oh no. It's an Ashley Simpson.
So they're standing there not doing anything as the song plays, is what's occurring.
What? Oh my, I hope this is some form of protest.
They're not making eye contact with the camera, but the camera has like pushed in.
And now it's leaning back, and now he's walking it back. Are they aware that they were cued in, or are they not?
They clearly must not be hearing the track playing behind them.
Oh no.
Did they not hear the woman introduced them? What is happening?
Oh, sorry about that.
Do we know what happened?
I think it was that the sound was not getting pumped to their end, so they did not hear any of the backing track to mimic along to.
But the plan was to lip sync.
Yeah, I think that's the type of show where going to be the option.
That's what they did on American Bandstand and all those other shows.
Right. Well, artistically, that's selling out, so it's what they get.
Wow.
It's every things that to sell out.
True. Yeah.
This is the end of my segment. Andy, take it away.
All right, then. I will then begin to talk about Melanie, track number 7 off of Even Worse, coming in at a whopping 3 minutes and 58 seconds. Yes, not really a specific pastiche of anything. We got some Owen Paul in there. We got some Tom Petty. Recorded during the first recording session that was started on November 30th, 1980. Wait, is it 87 or 86? It should
87 because the album came out in 88.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. Because you mentioned 1986 earlier, and I'm like, oh crap, did I write that wrong? Oh well. Again, I did this research very hastily, so
you did a great job.
It'll be great.
So far, so good.
So far, these are facts.
Yes.
The song, if we have not gotten into full detail about, is it's a stalker's twisted love song, which, you know, can be kind of par for the course when Weird Al does a love song. We had You Make Me earlier this season, which is not a stalker creepy love song, but it is weird. This one is a creepy stalker love song, which Nathan Rabin describes very perfectly in his The Weird Accordion to Al. I quote, "The story Melanie tells is elegant in its archetypal simplicity. It's the old boy buys telescope, boy spies beautiful stranger in nearby building while snooping on her with aforementioned telescope, boy begins courting girl with psychotic acts of obsession, and then finally boy deliberately plummets out window to his death and is possibly singing the entire song as a ghost story you find in pretty much everything Taylor Swift has done."
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty much the Tortured Poets Department. That would be my description of it.
Speaking of which, quick aside, last Friday, Grace told me that she was not too into this album.
Listen.
I started listening to it today. You were worried that you were going to taint my listen of it by saying that. I don't know if you did. Act 1, all sounds the same. Act 2, like a little more. Still getting through Act 3, but it sounds like Act 1.
Yeah. Look, Swifties who listen to this podcast, of which I'm sure there are many.
They're waiting for our TMZ episode, which is not for a while.
I want to say I'm sorry to any of you. The album just, like, I like some of it, but I just think it's like very kind of samey.
It's very samey. Yeah, we listened to it on a road trip on Saturday, and it sounded like one long meandering song. Florida, which was weird.
Florida's good. I liked Florida.
No, I don't even know if it was. It wasn't good, but it was different than the rest of the songs.
I enjoyed it.
No, I thought that I liked it at first too, but I think it's just like because Florence and the Machine is on it, and I love Florence. Yeah. But I'm like listening to it, it's like the Florida's a hell of a drug. Like, is it? I don't think so. I haven't found that. The lyrics are a bit random.
We just had watched the Florida episode of Broad City. So it was like a nice coupling of like, oh, this is a fun coincidence that this is about the same subject. But yeah, it's like, it's surface level, name 10 things about Florida and put it into
it's a like
song.
A Weird Al song.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. Like she mentions Destin, which is crazy. I saw this video on TikTok of like a full bachelorette party, like, having a listen party for the new album, and this bachelorette party just happened to be located in Destin for this party, and they're listening to the song, and she says like timeshare down in Destin, and they all hop up off the couch like, whoa, yes. And I'm like, that's not like, that wasn't like a complimentary like thing about Destin, that was like like the whole album is like, oh, like I'm so depressed because my Maddie Healy, my rebound, like ended up being super toxic. And now I'm like in Destin because I hate myself. And these girls were like, woo, we're there.
Like us too.
Yeah. At a bachelorette party. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I do like, but daddy, I love him just for the line. Like I'm having his baby. I'm not, but the look, you should see your face.
I like that.
I love that line.
I like down bad. Like kind of despite myself, I'm like, okay, crying at the gym, whatever, but I like it. But the rest, I don't know. It just feels like she like, it's, I like, I love her. I just think she needed a bit more time to cook on this one. Cause it feels like she kind of like read out some diary entries over like Jack Antonoff's like synth beats.
Yeah.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, all the albums that Jack Antonoff has produced, I feel like it all sounds the same, which is, it all sounds like Bleachers, which all sound the same. And it's just kind of like, you need to find a new producer because this guy's not doing it for you.
Yeah. I mean, I liked...
Everything's the same tempo. Everything has the same instrumentation.
It's just boring. It's like the music is just there to sort of like sit in the background of the lyrics. Like Taylor Swift used to write like really tight songs, like Earworms, like 1989. Yeah. The pop music on 1989 is like some of the most iconic. Like
1989 is great.
Even Lover, like Cruel Summer, like she just is like, dare I say, like where's the single on this album? Mm-hmm. I don't think there is one. Anyway.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the lyrics too, because just like, yeah, they were very tight. There are some things in this where it's like the phrasing is so awkward. It's like, why did you use a five-syllable word when you could have used a two-syllable
word?
To sound smart? You are smart. Like, we got this.
Some of the lines don't even like make sense. She's like, I was a functioning alcoholic until nobody noticed my new aesthetic. Like, what does that mean actually? Like, what's happening there?
It's her thesis statement for like her dissertation or something. Like what?
I don't know.
Anyway, Weird Al. So according to Al, he wrote several additional verses to this song that he would only sing to friends. Again, my research is very hasty, so I didn't do a whole lot trying to find these lyrics, but I get the sneaking suspicion that they're nowhere to be found. They're just private.
Someone described them on the forum as PG-13.
Okay, this is what I wanted to talk about.
That's all I know.
If those lyrics are PG-13, then what the hell is this song? Because it's just... And it's also like, yes, Al works clean, but... That's just in terms of like profanity.
I would argue that this could be a Pepe Le Pew sketch, which is what, for children? Was that Y7 rated? So,
when the TV ratings first came out,
yeah.
But it's like, I think the majority of his songbook is PG-13. Because there, you know, he skirts that line of inappropriateness sometimes, and if there's violence and
I don't know, you can say the F word twice in a PG-13 movie.
Well, what's
Grace,
your point?
Grace, would you like to drop the first one here now?
Is it allowed? I didn't think of
no, it'll be honked.
Okay, the only reason I know that rule is because the X-Men movies used to do this thing where, like, all the X-Men movies were PG-13, and it was, like, a mm-hmm. thing that it was, like, there was one per movie. Mm-hmm. And I used to be obsessed with the X-Men, and I would watch, like, cast interviews, and they'd be like, yeah, we all fight every movie over who gets to say the like,
who's and it's always Wolverine.
Except James McAvoy got to do it once in, like, Days of Future Past, I think.
Oh, yeah. He did, but he's quoting Wolverine, even though he's misquoting.
Yes,
Wolverine.
Their little encounter with him in First Class, like it's when it's like 70s Charles Xavier, and he's like, "I'm not in my wheelchair anymore. Fuck off!" Like that's, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, funnily enough, the day we're recording this, the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer came out with a lot of F bombs.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Al mentions the Gailmore Building. That Melanie lives in a building across the street from the Gailmore Building. Al actually rented an apartment in the Gailmore Building, which is in LA.
What is that?
It's an apartment building.
All right, I'm gonna Google Maps it.
Yeah, it's if you go to the wiki page for Al, the address is there. I didn't know if I didn't necessarily feel comfortable saying it.
How do we spell
on the podcast?
Gailmore.
G-A-I-L. And then M-O-R-E.
You think the person who lives there currently gets, like, people like you guys turning up outside their apartment?
I hope
well,
so.
It's Melanie didn't live in the Gailmore apartment. She lived across from the Gailmore.
Right, but he lived there, right?
He lived there. Yeah. Oh, so just people trying to see. Oh, okay, so it's a reverse thing, and now people are stalking Al, even though Al doesn't live there.
Right.
Gotcha. Yes, I do think that happened.
Probably, right?
This has 108 South Gramercy Place.
That sounds familiar.
Is that what it is or something close
to
that?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so near it is the Koreatown Escape Rooms. So that's pretty
which I'm sure existed in 1988.
I love an escape room.
Oh yeah?
Yeah,
I
really
also
good.
I think it's entirely I mean like a lot of things. If you got the right combo of people, an excellent hour of day spent.
Yeah.
Never done one.
There's also the OG Kush Dispensary a block away.
Ooh. So, you know, our listeners love Kush, so that'll be our ad for this episode.
Oh, this is exciting. There's competing escape room businesses literally across the street from each other.
Really?
It's called 60 Out Escape Rooms, Koreatown. And then the one closer to Oxford Avenue is called Quest Room, Los Angeles Escape Rooms.
I'll have to go to them both.
Ooh, they have a Godzilla versus Kong escape room.
That's fun.
They have a Smurfs escape room. Oh, they have videos for each of these. Jumanji. I did the Jumanji one. And then they just got generic stuff. Wizard's Treasure, Hotel on Road 66, Hyde Circus, Time Machine, Mafia, Orphanage, Casino Heist 2.
These Quest Room ones are a bit less family friendly. There's one called Malediction, which they note in bold letters that this game is the adult version of our game Spellbreakers.
Oh.
This game features a dark mode that players can select to change the tone of the game to a raunchy, mature rated R version.
Oh boy.
Do not play dark mode unless you are ready to be berated and humiliated by the actor. It is not a scarier version in bold.
It's not a scarier version. It just becomes a roast.
But like a raunchy roast? Like, I feel like it's like a humiliation kink, but make it an escape room?
All right. Oh, no. Road trip, everybody.
Yeah, you have to beat the witch's curse if you wish to survive and find your way home. You need to break into the witch's cabin to create a magical elixir that can transform the warrior back. Otherwise, you may find yourselves as the next stone statues. I'm really, the vibes here are really, really intense. And I feel
that's
like I
awesome.
Need to go. There's another one called
that's
Bloody, Bloody Elbow. Bloody Elbow. And Da Vinci's Challenge. They have one coming up that's just called Alice in Trouble.
Hmm.
Oh, funny, because the 60 Out one has an Alice in Wonderland, so I wonder if it's the same Alice.
Yeah.
Grandma's Master Plan. Oh, my God.
Oh.
So
Dr. Psycho. Hey, I got Da Vinci's Secret, too.
The promo pictures for some of these. For Bloody Elbow, there's a lot of promo pictures of a very muscular man whipping a victim tied to a table. He's completely shirtless, but he has a hood on. The hood is not attached to anything. So
protect his anonymity.
Right. It's deeply unsettling me. Hashtag R-rated version, hashtag B-rated and humiliated.
Grace, I'm hearing the sound of a printer printing off
It's me texting Guy and telling everybody to go. There's a large...
We got a pack now.
So frightening. Hashtag beware the witch's wrath, guys.
Wow. So this is good. What? So when Andy and I make a road trip for this show, the Hollywood Walk of Fame is a mile north of this. And this is basically South Hollywood. Walk of Fame is in North Hollywood. Yeah. Pretty simple road trip now.
That's a day. Yeah. This song, Melanie, has been performed 391 times. Apparently that's a number I can't say. Between 1996 and 2023, most prominently during the Bad Hair Tour in 1996. Here is a video of Al performing the song during the Self-Indulgent Vanity Tour in 2018 in Atlantic City. It is cell phone footage from Dana E. Stinson.
What can the
I think the thing to like really note about this song, besides the questionable lyrical content, is that the melody really is pretty.
Yeah.
The chorus is very catchy and very beautiful, even if it is a ripoff of another song, but it's good.
Well, listening to the song, I was like, Weird Al's actually like a pretty skilled vocalist.
He is.
Pretty good.
And he's only gotten better.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of singing the words at a concert? Like, what's the personal etiquette protocol for that?
I feel like...
Like singing along with the artist, you mean?
Yeah. Like you got a really enthusiastic fan, and they're like singing out all the songs.
I feel like it's fine within reason. Like, going to the Eras Tour, there were girls, like, screaming along to some of the lyrics to the songs.
Sure.
Which I'm like, use your brain, read the room. This is a collective experience. But also, to be like, no, don't sing along. That's being a killjoy. So you gotta read the room, is my non-answer to your question.
Good. Good non-answer.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I have a non-answer too, which is, I think it depends on the artist, the song, and the venue. You know, because like some bands are made for singing along, and some others, it's just kind of like, I'm just going to groove to this. Like, I'm not going to go to a Rogue Wave concert and sing along. I'm just going to enjoy the songs. But yeah, like Taylor Swift or like some kind of event thing kind of calls for that.
Yeah.
Or at least it's more acceptable.
I've definitely been at shows where I have been like the one person who knows the band, and usually other people have sort of shown up to like have a picnic or whatever. And I've been like, you know what? No, I'm just gonna enjoy myself. And I feel like I've been annoying on a couple of occasions, but I don't feel bad about it that bad.
I mean, it's kind of like I've thought about this a bunch. When you do karaoke, do you pick a song that is for everyone in the bar or in the private room, or do you do a song for you? And, like, sometimes there is a balance, in my opinion. Like, there are songs that I would love to do for karaoke, but that are not quote-unquote karaoke songs. But, you know, like, I don't know if I would do that at the Mint.
I'm, like, deeply anti-karaoke as an experience. Okay. So I feel like it's fun for like nobody involved, like the person singing or the people have to listen to you.
Oh,
but I feel
good.
Like when I've had to do karaoke, I always pick a song that I'm like, I'm gonna sound good on this song. It's not really about like
sure
everybody else like knowing the song. Like, I want people to think like, oh, like, was Grace in choir in high school? And I was.
Oh, interesting.
That's really what it's about for me.
I usually err on the side of a song that generally people know, because it's almost like grabbing the ox in a road trip. Like, if you're playing a song that's good, I think people will be like, maybe appreciate it. But if they're not able to sing along, they're just going to wait for their turn to do their thing.
Yeah.
And it's karaoke, so they're not even going to really understand what the new song is because you're screaming over the top of it. So probably a bad move to do like a deep cut during a karaoke jam.
Yeah. I don't know why that brought back this memory, but like when I went to Coachella in 2009, 2010, one of those years, the friends I was driving with, like I made, we were using my car, which had a CD player, and I made a bunch of mixes that included some of the artists that were playing that year and just some other stuff and some like stand-up bits. It was the case where like we listened to one and someone else in the car had made mixes too, but like of specific artists or genres. And it was the case, like we played one, neither of the other two people seemed to enjoy it for some reason. So they put in the sleepiest country music mix I've heard in my life. And I'm driving to LA, and that's more preferable than my shit. Okay. Thanks, Lizzie.
Thanks, Lizzie.
Yeah. So I tried to swallow the offense I had taken from that.
In Lizzie's defense, you made a mix that had Coachella musics and then also stand-up comedy in the middle of it?
We were stand-up fans too. It was just, I put a bunch of shit in a playlist and hit shuffle.
That sounds like what you did. That sounds
like what you did.
What you originally pitched it was like curating an experience.
It's okay.
Okay, but sleepy country music on a road trip, bad idea. Bad idea.
Yeah, don't I feel worry. Like the driver has like a veto power on.
Yeah.
What's Nobody going likes on. When I play my music in the car either. Don't worry, Andy. I'm like always last choice to handle the aux. One time, my brother in high school would refuse to ride in the car with me for like a few weeks. He was like, I'm going to get a ride from literally anyone else, because whenever I was in the car, I would play the original song from the 2017 live action version of Beauty and the Beast. The song is called Evermore. It is sung by Dan Stevens as the Beast. And I recommend listening to it. It was like my number three song of the year that year or something.
You have a strong musical ethos with like the Glee version of Queen and not the original Beauty and the Beast soundtrack, but the song that nobody knows from the new Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like this is where I reveal that I have like the worst music taste of anybody that I've ever met, and multiple people have told me this. So thank you for inviting me on this music podcast.
You're very welcome.
That's unfair for people to tell anybody that you have bad music taste, because music taste is yours and you should own it.
That's true. Mine is really bad. No one should be to judge that. Mine's really bad though. It's like.
No one's absolutely wrong or absolutely right, but there's a spectrum of tastes and quality. That's
And I'm, you know, on a certain end of that spectrum. It's like show tunes, emo music, and top 40 is kind of my... And also I like to work out to Survivor music mixes, like mixes of the background music from the show.
Oh my god,
the score for the show. Oh, love it.
Like the
hand drums.
That's like all my YouTube recommendations are like generic tribal music from Survivor episodes, like that they play when the players like doing the challenges and stuff. Because it's the only way I can like
that's great
hype myself up on the treadmill. Is I'm like yes, like dig it. Yeah,
endurance challenge.
Yeah. So that's what we're working with.
That's exciting. I feel like your high quality film and TV show balances out what appears to be like a real from the hip helter skelter music preferences.
You gotta have one or the other, I feel.
Yeah.
Anyone who says they have great taste in all of those mediums is deluding themselves. I think you gotta pick one. That's why I have perfect film and TV takes, as everyone
tells you me. Have to. It's a necessity.
Yeah, it's like 0 and 100. Yeah.
That's what I got for Melanie, except for just something that will not be fun for the listeners of this, but it is a song that got the Illustrated Al treatment with some illustrations by, who did this? Craig Rousseau.
Thanks, Craig Rousseau.
Yeah, so pick up that book at your local Weird Al website. I'm done. Now we're at your leg of the whole episode.
You get to control where this conversation goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do my homework and I didn't feel like A to seeing. So I sort of A to aid for my topic. And I looked into the stalking is love trope in media. So
is that
I
the wrong thing to say? Love it.
I love it. Love it. So I did a little deep dive, a shallow dive into stalking in media, and specifically the trope of like a love interest being a stalker, because that's what the song's about. So I feel like if the song's parodying anything, it's parodying how normalized it is in, you know, romance media for the male, like, white knight character to be like a mild stalker, and it's all justified because his actions were in
the
service
hero.
Of, you know, like love or whatever. So,
and the female love interest is probably dating some ass
and she needs help.
So it's okay. Exactly.
So I, you know, as any pop culture detective does, I went to tvtropes.org to research this. And we all know the obvious ones like Twilight and Shades of Grey. Edward famously watches Bella sleep in Twilight, and they take that a step further in Twilight parody, Twilight homage, 50 Shades of Grey.
Tribute?
Yeah. Tribute. It's, you know, it's fan fiction turned fiction. But Christian Grey famously tracks Anastasia Steele's phone in that movie. But I'm not here to talk about the obvious stuff. I want to talk about some deep cuts. So what I found on the tvtropes.org page for the stalking is love trope, they have a section called fan works, where we see this trope. So I'm just going to read this out loud.
this preamble is intense.
Guys, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be really funny. Okay. So don't even worry about it. So this trope essentially applies in the celebrity fanfic Best Days of Our Lives, which portrays Kelly Clarkson and Carrie Underwood as childhood sweethearts. Their relationship fell apart after high school graduation because Carrie's mother was constantly making it clear when things weren't going well for them, even though the relationship itself was always happy. And after a run of bad luck involving their potential new apartment burning down before they could move in, Carrie was persuaded to return to her parents. After Kelly had her victory on American Idol, it was basically impossible for Carrie to get back in touch with her through normal channels, to the extent that Carrie tried out for Idol herself just to get Kelly's attention and was genuinely surprised when she won. So obviously problematic. And
this is like fan fiction.
It's, do you guys know
about two random celebrities?
You've never read, heard of fan fiction about two celebrities? You've not dived into that world?
I have.
I mean, I've never read any, but of course.
The only fan fiction that I have been privy to is that when I was a freshman in college, there was a Twilight inspired fanfic that I just got like viral, I guess, at some point.
Was it 50 Shades of Grey?
I don't think it was, but it was like, it was gothy vampire-y vibes, and it, like, the theater kids, because I was like lived in the theater wing of the college dorms, they were like knew it by name, and we did like a dramatic reading of it one Saturday night in like the dorm lobby.
That might be, well, not to out myself as a person who knows about fan fiction, but That might there's a very famous, like internet famous, like Harry Potter fanfic, that is like infamously cringe.
There's a one of our upcoming guests went to college with me, so I will try to double back on this and close this loop in a future episode to see if we can actually uncover what on earth I was imagining, or if it was some sort of fever dream. God knows.
Yeah.
I dreamt about fan fiction. What a life you lead.
Yeah. I'm not going to say I didn't read fan fiction back in the day. Some of my friends and I in college started a podcast about fan fiction for a whole 3 episodes.
I think that's a good topic. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like kind of about like the internet culture around fan fiction and how fan fiction is often like a very, very strange and often very problematic. But very prevalent outlet for like female fans to like engage with a piece of media. So,
right.
You know, back in the day watching Sherlock, Supernatural, etc. Like the way that female fans would engage with those shows would be like writing fan fiction about like shipping, like, you know, Sherlock Holmes and John Watson. Like,
I mean, that's what Tumblr was made for.
Yeah. So that was like, you know, that was my whole teenage existence. So oftentimes I'll be like talking to someone, I'll be like, oh yeah, you know, like fanfic, like that's, you know, and they have no idea what I'm talking about. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's a weird thing to say out loud and admit to in public.
I teach high school students, and occasionally they'll be in my room eating lunch, and there's this pod of like upperclassmen that don't talk about shipping fictional characters. Their hobby is policing the movements of shipping other characters and sort of pontificating on why it is problematic and toxic to like spend time imagining things about others. It's a whole nother layer of like not creating, but just now being critics of, on sort of like a moral level.
That's funny.
Of like fairies and dwarfs and orcs and whatever. Yeah.
And still it that becoming its own obsession.
Yes. They talk about it to the length that someone would talk about creating their own story.
But there's no winning.
That was like very like a sort of like less advanced version of that was fairly prevalent when I was like a teenager on Tumblr. But it was more we were more realistic about it. Like it was like ship wars. So it was like, you know, people would argue about their ship being better than somebody else's ship. And oftentimes the sort of like argument tactic that was used to justify that was like, well, because your ship is problematic. So like it's Supernatural. So the show Supernatural, is about two brothers, Sam and Dean Winchester, who traverse America and they're like ghosts and ghoul hunters.
And nobody ever wrote a fan fiction where those two men are shipped, I'm sure. Never once.
Oh, Tim.
Is that that's the definition of slash fiction, isn't it?
Well, okay.
When it's incestual?
No, the definition of slash fiction is when it's two men, I think.
Just when it's homosexual.
When it's gay, yeah. But yeah, like, so their names are Sam and Dean Winchester, and that ship was Wincest, was the name of the, like, the ship name. And then, like, another male character came onto the show, like, season 4, like,
Castiel,
who's an angel. Mm-hmm. And then people, you know, really pivoted to shipping, like, one of the brothers with that new character.
Which they apparently, I never watched the show, but I do know a lot about it. They did kind of make canon in the last season.
In the worst, it was sorta. Like, it was in, like, the most monkey's paw way. Like,
yeah.
I love when a show, like, when the ship, like, becomes so big that the show, like, can't not acknowledge it, but also they like need to like make it seem like okay for their mainstream audience, so they sort of like just joke about it or like half acknowledge it. But Supernatural, like in its last season, like after like, because the show went on for like 15 seasons, it was like 10 seasons of fans like rabidly shipping this couple together to the point where like the actors would get like sort of harassed about it. It was like a whole thing. And then in like the final season, like the Castiel character like confessed his love for Dean, and then immediately after confessing his love, Dean like says nothing thing has no reaction, and then Castiel immediately gets murdered and then dragged to like super hell, and that's the end of it.
But wasn't he like already sacrificing himself, so he knew he was going to die?
So, yeah, it was like,
was it just a random happenstance?
It was like, yeah, I think it was kind of like he knew he was gonna die, and it was sort of like, I think he's, yeah, it was sort of like a goodbye, but then like it, Dean never responds, it's never like talked about, and they just kill Castiel.
Right.
So yeah, I was like, no, like we didn't want that.
Yeah, Dean's probably just like, huh.
Yeah, I stopped watching the show by that point because I like had like a boyfriend, so I wasn't really like interested. It's like, oh, okay.
You are cool now.
Well, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I think it's
you were no longer playing the mom in plays. You had a guy.
No, I had a guy. Although it's funny, like, even, like, when I do, like, comedy sketches and stuff, people always cast me as the mom, and I'm like, I'm gonna choose not to read into that, like, really choose not to read into that. Yeah, so I stopped watching the show by that point, but I remember the online uproar around all of it, and
yeah. South Park did something like that, too, because apparently there was, like, a lot of online fan art of, I think it was Tweak and Craig... It was Tweak and somebody else, but like shipping them. And so they did a whole episode where like people at the school, girls at the school were drawing like manga art of them. And so they like pretended to be a couple. That's so for like a whole season.
Tim, what's your OTP? You seem really engaged.
OTP is a phrase that means...
It stands for one true pairing. So it's like the couple that you hold above all else.
The like a pairing that I have to make or one that already exists?
It can really be whatever. Just a couple from a piece of media that you're like, I would read stories about them in the dead of night on my computer.
Okay. That's a good prompt.
Yeah, just reading a giant booklet and then hugging it to your chest as you dream.
Are you guys so glad you invited me on?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, it's a world that I have 0% like, understanding of. So, like...
It's like, you know, like, the OG was, like, Kirk and Spock. Like, Kirk and Spock, like, shippers back in the day, like, arguably, like, originated, like, slash as a cultural phenomenon.
Interesting.
Shipped Spark.
Okay, so I guess I like more parameters. It helps it
remove from infinite options. Back. I gotta go back. So yeah, they strategically labeled that as Spurk and not the other one.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, they chose to keep it family.
It remains doesn't need to be said, yeah. But we can all think it.
The portmanteaus are kind of my favorite thing about shipping.
What are the good ones?
Well, like Katniss and Peeta from the Hunger Games. There's another obvious option there, but
oh sure,
people have gone with the much friendlier Everlark instead.
That's classy.
Yeah, that's a whole. This I'm realizing now that this is maybe we should just talk about stalking more instead.
Well, it seems like a good safe way to go around this topic.
You want to?
It's so hard to think of all media and then two people.
But like all like if like okay, like if you were just try to put yourself in the mind of like a 5'8" like 13-year-old girl who's a theater kid.
Yeah.
And she's growing up in Oak Park, California, and she's weird and she does improv comedy and like this is her hobby. Like if you were her,
right,
you would go home after school and you would eat Cheez-Its and you would sit down and look at your iPad and read stories about what couple speak from your heart go.
My favorite. This makes me think of like duos turning into lovers.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be the format, right? So I instantly
it can really be whatever you want, to be honest. Okay. It can also be two people that you just want to watch have sex. That's also okay. Yeah.
Godzilla and Kong.
Yeah.
I like the idea that romance. You're like, no, whatever you want.
Well,
sex.
It's
like,
really,
oh, it's so different from romance.
Really a big, well, it's there's really a big range sort of available to you. just dip your toe in.
Sure. Because yeah. I was thinking like Timon and Pumbaa, because
that would be cool.
They had that, like, didn't they had like a rip, a, like a movie that was like Lion King from their perspective, basically.
Yeah, and it
was
Lion King one and a half.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So like I've experienced like them going off on their like adventures together.
It's sort of like the Lion King version of like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead, yeah. which is funny to me.
I mean,
it is.
That is who they
it
are.
Is that like it is that. It's not sort of. It is that. Which is very funny to me. But yeah, Timon and Pumbaa. Like I'm sure there's like smut out there of that. No, I'm like.
Of course there is.
I'm sure there is.
I'm on my personal computer. Let me do a little.
Incognito mode.
No, I don't need PG-13 incognito. I'm not ashamed. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
25, mm-hmm. baby. 25. That's pretty low, but it does exist.
What do you mean? What, 25 25?
Results?
Yeah, let me send. I'm gonna send you guys a link.
Oh,
there you go.
Oh yeah, I know this website. Yeah, this is fan fiction heaven.
Let's look at the one explicit one. It is in Russian. That's a shame.
This is Archive of Our Own beta.
Yeah,
you've never heard of this?
I've never heard of any of this.
This is so embarrassing. I'm outing myself like this.
Due to an influx of abusive spam comments, we've temporarily turned off the ability to leave comments while logged out. We apologize for the inconvenience and hope comments can come back soon. Does that mean if I log in, I can leave comments?
It does, if you have an account, yeah.
All right, here we go, everyone. Oh, get an invitation? I have to get an invite?
Really? They like...
Wow, it's become very exclusive.
Yeah. It's a really, I have
to confirm that I'm at least 13 years of old and you're in a country whose residents
13
have to be able, oh, to have the age of 13 to consent, old enough to process personal data without teen, blah, 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 blah.
I don't remember my old password.
All right, well, here's a weird pals pod. Add me to the list. Click.
Are they just like Timon and Pumbaa stories or are they ship stories?
So the filter is Pumbaa / Timon, and the / implies
that usually means
couple.
It. Yeah,
that's what I'm filtering for. Again, not that I would know because I'm an adult with a life now, but just a guess.
The tags in a lot of these, I mean, oh, Baloo and Mowgli. Okay, now we're getting into something
mm-hmm,
there.
Mm-hmm.
Jiminy Cricket and the Fairy Godmother. Okay,
yeah.
Where do I read a story?
You could just click on it. Like, just click on the title.
The
any
red
title.
Title?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cinderella and the Fairy Godmother. There you go. Donald Duck and Goofy and Mickey. That's a thruple.
Yeah.
When the world turns its back on you.
This is pretty clean, I will say, for Archive of Our Own.
Summary. Timon and Pumbaa find Simba in the desert.
That sounds like what happens in The Lion King. So,
content warning. Period. Typical homophobia. What?
Period. Typical.
In the jungle?
And also, no, it's set in Arizona.
That's cool.
La Paz County, Arizona, 1994.
See, the world is your oyster, Tim.
What? Hold on, I'm going to read some of this. This is Timon and Pumbaa. This is written by The Pie
Lady.
Lady.
Some of these stories have like a warning, graphic depictions of violence, major character death.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Probably referencing Mufasa, I'm going to be honest. Okay. That's probably why that tag is there.
Okay.
There we go. Pumbaa turned the key partway around the ignition, not enough to rev the engine, but enough to turn the power on.
What?
And the walls of the cockpit suddenly lit up with what looked like Christmas lights mounted on the walls and ceiling. Arranged to look like rows of buttons, indicator lights, and displays of stars charts. Wow, cool, Simba breathed. Do you recognize it? Timon asked.
Oh, Jesus.
No? It's the Millennium Falcon. Simba looked from one to the other. What's that? He asked. Both men stared at him. What's that? Timon mimicked. That is something we will rectify if you stay. You will want to ride in the passenger seat? Sure, Simba said. Climb in, kid. We'll let you punch in the hyperdrive.
Right. That sounds...
There's a note at the bottom that says, guys, in answer to all your questions, I don't know. I don't know why they have their cartoon names if they're human. Oh, they're human in this.
Yeah, this is an AU, which stands for Alternate Universe.
Oh.
I don't know where this idea came from. The scene just planted itself in my brain one day, and I couldn't get a good night's sleep until I finished it. I don't plan to write more, but we'll see. In the meantime, here are some links for you youngins.
That's Grace, could you give me, like, I need, like, a vernacular lesson here, because you've used a couple of phrases that I'm fascinated by. It's like kind of learning a second language. I've now learned that, like, slashing is, like, sexual couples of generally males.
Well, sort of.
Okay, there's nuance here.
Yeah, so shipping in general is just like you like this couple, you want them to be together, it's relationship, you ship them, you want them to be in a relationship.
Jim and Pam.
Yeah, you ship Jam or whatever their name would be. Yeah, so that's shipping. OTP, you learned about this one true pair, that's like the pair that you like the most. AU stands for alternate universe, so there's all sorts of like known fan fiction tropes, like coffee shop AU, where one of the characters works in a coffee shop and the other character comes there every day, or like AU, like they're it's there in space, or AU, like it crosses over with another
AU,
universe.
Like one of the character is a pizza delivery guy and the other character doesn't have any cash.
Yep, sure. That exists.
Believe it.
Yeah. There's slash is like is specifically referring to like a ship that's two men, I think. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's most of it. Oh yeah, there's PWP, which depending on who you ask stands for plot, what plot, or porn without plot. So
yeah,
but the same thing.
But the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you filter it out to your heart's desire, whatever you want to read.
Well, I've gone to the tag section, and one of the largest ones is alternate universe.
Yeah,
makes sense there. There's this one says alpha beta omega dynamics.
Oh no! Don't ask me to explain that.
It's shortened to AO3. Apparently,
no. You guys not know what that is.
I assume it has something to do with, like, you know, alpha males, beta males. I don't know what an omega male is.
What?
If that's even a thing.
It is.
Like, I don't want any explanations. I just want your reactions.
It's really, okay. Alpha, it's, okay. I'm going to just send you a link to what it is.
Grace, your face has turned bright red.
It's, okay. It's a trope in fan fiction. Okay, it's for trope and fan fiction. I'm going to read the Wikipedia page because I don't know what this is, and I'm reading it and discovering it with you because I don't know what this is.
Right, you've never heard of it once.
I've never heard of it. It is a kink trope wherein some people have defined biological roles based on a hierarchical system. The terms were borrowed from older behavior research on captive wolves that had been misappropriated by popular culture. But this is important. Do not reflect current wolf behavior research.
I love that caveat. But like the internet has recently, in the last like two years, like we got alpha males wrong. Mm-hmm. Wolves don't have alpha wolves.
Right. So alphas are the highest rank in the dominance hierarchy. They exhibit dominant behavior.
and the like and such.
And then beta is sort of like in the middle. I've never really understood like why they're sort of there, to be honest with you. Not that I, like, if I knew what this was, I would think that. And then omegas are the lowest rank. They can get pregnant and go into heat, even the men.
Mm.
So just really think about, you know, why
some other. Some other large ones in here. And by large, I mean the size of the font is large, which means there's lots of tags.
What is, like, whatever. Word cloud style?
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. Canon related makes me think of, like, it has to do with the main story.
Yeah, if something's canon, that means it's, like fact within the story.
Cool.
So it's canon that Mufasa dies in Lion King. That's canon that happens in the story.
Nice.
And fan fiction is not canon, like, by design.
One of the tags is, I wrote this instead of sleeping. That one's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a lot on this website.
Yeah.
I did write a fan fiction for a while. It wasn't in this style, but I wrote my own spin-off series of 24.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Where Kiefer Sutherland is an alpha and he's looking for...
No, it's Jack Bauer and Tony Almeida just falling in love over the course of 24 hours.
It's Kiefer Sutherland, right? Wait.
Yes, okay. Yes. Okay.
What about podfic and podficked works?
I think it's a podfic is where it's read aloud and you can listen to it like it's a podcast.
Oh.
I think that one I actually don't know because for me it was like a bridge too far to like listen to someone else read it. I'm like that's weird. That's weird.
That's weird.
Hearing it out loud makes it weirder.
It makes it real.
Yeah.
I've got three that I don't understand.
Okay.
Dead dove, colon, do not eat.
That means, I think that means, let me see.
Dead dove?
That generally meant like it's gross or something, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, okay.
Do not eat while reading this. Okay.
It's a warning or tag that is used and interpreted in multiple different ways. The phrase comes from a meme referencing the 2003 Arrested Development episode Top Banana, in which Michael Bluth opens a paper bag labeled Dead Dove, Do Not Eat. And upon discovering that there is a dead dove inside the bag, says, I don't know what I expected. So it was initially proposed in 2015 as a way to indicate that a fan work depicts tropes that might be viewed as problematic without necessarily any subversion or condemnation of those tropes. But confusion over the intended meaning of the tag has led to varied interpretations and usage over the years since it was coined.
Mm.
It's a content warning.
Sure.
So it's violent, gross, or dark.
Okay. The second of three, I have reader insert.
That's the classic. Like, it's a self-insert fic.
Oh, you just guys, like, I'm a character. I'm you guys a person. Know, like, I'm me, and I'm dealing with Timon and Pumbaa.
Well, it's more like if you're a fan of Harry Styles and you want to read fan fiction about Harry Styles being in love with you, it's like written in the second person typically. So it's like you do this or, you know, I do this or something. Second or first person. And then that's the famous like Y/N, like, which stands for your name. So those self-insert fics will have like Harry Styles say something and it'll be like, you're so beautiful, comma, Y/N. And the reader is meant to realize that that stands for your name and imagine that Harry Styles is saying, you're so beautiful, Grace. That's real. That's real. Like that, that's like the Wattpad kind of genre of fan fiction. It's like self-insert.
The what?
Like Wattpad.
It's another fan fiction website. Yeah. Or just I can write whatever I want website.
Okay, here's the last one. It's at the end of the alphabet. It says WHUMP. WHUMP.
Let's see.
I feel like I talked about this recently. Weird.
WHUMP?
Yeah. It's a rather small one, so I don't know how popular it is.
Sounds like a Dr. Seuss thing.
Okay. This one I actually didn't know, but it's funny. The term WHUMP or WHUMPing generally refers to a form of hurt/comfort, which is a subgenre of fan fiction where a character is hurt and then comforted. That is heavy on the hurt. The exact definition varies. Essentially, WHUMP involves taking a canon character and placing them in physically painful or psychologically damaging scenarios. Often, this character is a fan favorite and may sometimes be referred to as a wooby. And a wooby is a beloved fanish character who evokes in fans the desire to wrap him up in a blanket and cuddle and comfort him.
Oh, no. Oh.
And they have examples of some ones. And one,
please list.
And one of the examples includes the Onceler from The Lorax is a wooby.
Oh, I have heard that there's a lot of Onceler fanfic.
Onceler? Who else? Neville Longbottom. Bottom,
yeah.
Draco Malfoy,
really?
Oh, please! Harry Potter fans love Draco Malfoy.
Well, I know there's like a strong Harry and Draco contingent out there.
Drury, Yeah, Dreary or Dramione was the big one when I was, like, I would get into fights with people about wanting Draco and Hermione together over Ron and Hermione. Like, I would get really upset about it.
Who were you fighting for in that scenario?
Ron.
Right. Okay.
No dating toxic men.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
No.
The Ron's not untoxic, but yeah.
Well, okay.
He's toxic, but in the books, he's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's another big one here. I almost regret saying this out loud. it's one of the biggest ones. It says Fluff.
Oh, Fluff is just like a cutesy, like, it's just like a cutesy fic.
It's
like,
how it's something... I interpret the word fluff is like how they.
Yeah, it's like fluff. It's fluffy, like it's an overly sweet, like.
Well, great. Awesome.
Story.
It's not the adult film industry version.
Not adult film industry. Nobody getting hurt. It's just like Harry and Draco go hold hands in the Owlery.
Aww,
and that's the sweet story, basically. It's fluff.
That's nice. That's good. Well, that's a good one to end on, right?
This really took me back in a big way. In a big way.
Are you going to find your archive of our own password?
I think I'm going to try to find it and see like what my old bookmarks were. Not that I like have any. Guys, I researched so much about stalking. I was going to talk about you. I was going to talk about Gossip Girl. I was going to talk about Pretty Little Liars.
Sure.
I was going to talk about Basic Instinct.
You can talk about whatever you want to.
No, it's okay. I just wanted you to know that I research something other than
sure.
This can be a 2-hour episode.
No.
That
was kind of it though, was romanticizing stalking, and now we've entered an era where shows are like, no guys, it's not romantic anymore. Basically was my point that I was gonna make, but now I just made it. So
there's, if I typed in stalking into Archive of Our Own, and the top story is a story called Stalking, but it's for the Magnum PI canon, but the 2018 television show iteration.
The remake, the reboot, yeah.
There's fanfiction.
Not the Tom Selleck one.
And it's in French.
For everything, there's fanfiction. Like, I think, like, the most popular ship on AO3 is probably still Dean and Castiel.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this will all be cut. Friends, this has been exciting. I've learned so much today. I didn't expect this to be such an educational episode, but here I am learning. It's hard to compare pieces of art. We're all art people and have strong feelings about the art that we love. So when someone asks you what's better, Survivor or this box of Nilla wafers, it might be hard to have like a critical analysis of those two, because you just instantly say, well, Survivor, and be done with those.
Am I to infer that Nilla wafers are art?
I think someone must think that.
Of the culinary variety.
Just checking. Yeah. Just checking. No judgment, just checking.
Thank God we have something to help us in this endeavor. We're going to go to getsongbpm.com and we're going to compare two songs. A question to the team is, which of the versions of the You're My Favorite Waste of Time shall we use to put up against Weird Al's Melanie?
I think the Owen Paul one.
Yeah.
The recent
That's
one?
The closest, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
Oh, by the way, my OTP would probably be Jack and Sawyer from Lost.
Oh my gosh, that's taste. That's taste.
taste. I feel like it's obvious, but not in a bad way.
No, in the best way. That's such taste, Andy. I have like newfound respect for you. I respect you even more than I do.
I win.
Yes.
I've never felt so outside of my comfort zone, but with good company, you know?
I'm here to push you.
Thank you. It's good. We are here to compare two songs. We have You're My Favorite Waste of Time by, who do we say this was? Owen Paul? Owen Paul.
Owen Paul.
My
Your
new
Scottish
friend.
Best friend.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, they're not friends yet.
That's right.
What's
Pending. Against Melanie by Weird Al. Let's start with round one. Grace, what's the tempo of Owen Paul's song?
The tempo is 119 BPM, beats per minute.
Wow, 119. Andy, what about Weird Al's Melanie?
Melanie is 129 beats per minute.
Wow.
10 more, if my math is correct.
Your math is correct. Yes. Round two. Grace, what's the danceability of You're My Favorite Waste of Time?
The danceability, very objective score, is 73.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Pretty danceable.
I feel like that's kind of too high, personally. But I don't work at this website, so.
I feel like no one works at this website.
They didn't ask me.
Yeah, it's all automated.
Andy?
What? Oh, yeah.
Danceability.
That's interesting that Owen Paul will take it because danceability for Melanie is 67. But that's interesting because Melanie is faster.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not that that's ever stopped any song before, but still.
Tis true. Tis true.
Neither's really that danceable.
But
you can do backwards cartwheels.
You can. You can do backwards cartwheels, like, and you can pull yourself out of a lake onto a pair of jet skis.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I guess is a dance of itself.
Right.
Grace, what about energy?
Energy, we're at 50, right in the middle.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
50 energy, like drinking coffee at 8 p.m.
Yep. Yep.
Uh-huh. Andy?
The energy quotient is 65 for Mystery Yankovic.
It's a big
old
energy.
See, that makes sense.
Yeah. You got to have energy when you're being a creepy stalker.
Is his work?
Burns cows.
It does.
It does.
Grace, what about acousticness?
Not good news for Owen on acousticness. No acoustics were used, apparently.
It's hard to hear.
Nary a guitar in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no harps. Not a lot of violins.
Well, they recorded it on a beach, which doesn't have great sound quality.
That's true.
Right.
All the waves.
That's hard.
Andy, what about Melanie? What's the acousticness?
Does anyone think it's zero?
I don't think so.
No.
No, it's 25.
Goodness.
But how crazy would that be?
That would be funny. But...
And we got one last one. Grace, what's the liveness of your My Favorite Waste of Time?
Liveness, we're also at 50.
Wow. That's interesting. It just doesn't know if it's live or not.
It's like kind of like the median song of all songs. I feel
it's Schrodinger's song. Yeah. It's neither alive nor
if
dead.
You wanted to keep Andy kind of awake while he's driving to Coachella, you can put this song on.
And then after that,
one eye open.
A stand-up set, apparently.
Don't you want to hear Okay, I'm not getting into this.
No. I don't want to hear stand-up ever.
I'm talking like John Mulaney, Mitch Hedberg,
no
stuff like that.
No. I'm good. Only Podfix when I drive to LA.
You know what? As so long as the next track is a bunch of hand drums and tribal yodeling.
Yeah. I only want to listen to vaguely appropriative tribal music. Is my sort of vibe nowadays.
Yeah. Andy, I need the liveness for Weird Al's Melanie.
Four.
Wow.
My goodness.
Yeah, right?
What, has anyone on this podcast ever challenged these rankings?
Oh, all the time.
Because they don't make sense.
They don't. But that's not the point.
I know. I'm sorry. I ruined it.
It's still science.
I ruined the game.
Science rarely makes sense.
Science?
That's true.
Who won? I lost
Weird
track.
Al. Weird Al wins.
Yay!
On this pad you can't read.
Does Weird Al often win?
Pretty frequently, I feel like. I feel like it might be like a 2/3 to 1/3 sort of ratio going on.
Yeah.
Nice.
And now you're into the annals of our written record of all these games. So your name's been added and logged.
I'm honored.
Grace, thank you so much for honoring our show with your presence.
Thank you for having me.
If you were to ship our audience with something that you do out in the public, what would you suggest that they go do?
I would tell them to come to Endgames Improv basic, almost any Friday night. And I'm either at the main Endgame theater or I'm next door, just sort of walk along Mission Street and look for a blonde woman standing next to a Brazilian man, and that'll be me, and go see one of my shows. And I also perform at Drunk Theater San Francisco on Saturdays now. So
I just saw Grace for the first time do Drunk Theater.
And it was so good. I was so good.
What am I doing? Oh, yes. Go see those shows in the Mission. And the Brazilian thing wasn't random. That's Guy. And we all like Guy.
Yeah.
Yes. That is the man who I'm dating. Just FYI.
You've been shipped on your own accord.
Yes.
So if you listen to this podcast and thought, damn, she seems cool and I'd like to date her, you can't.
I can't.
Sorry, everyone. She's ticked.
Yeah, so that pickup line about like being weird looking and always getting the parent roles, that wasn't what Guy's opening line was. He went with something different.
Amazingly, that was not what his opening line was. Yeah. He went with being my friend. That's a good strategy.
Yeah.
That's a good
the character of this song learn a thing or two about healthy relationships. Just be a friend, you know?
Yeah.
Well, he can't. He's dead.
Right. Sorry about that.
The character.
True.
Speaking of dead, let's kill this episode. Everyone, we got to get out of here by saying the show's famous catchphrase. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Was I supposed to say make it up?
No.
Okay, bye.